After the Now. Introduction. Is all that we see, is all that we are, just stimulus fed to a brain in a jar? I think I'm dead. I seem to drift backwards and forwards across the span of my somewhat disappointing life. Sometimes I drift into realms beyond what I have lived, and the time of my existence seems twisted. So I'm writing it all down, trying to create a linear narrative. But am I really writing it down? Do I even have hands? I oftentimes can smell the nourishing fluids and feel the confines of the metal jar that I seem to be trapped inside. Just a brain, no arms, legs, eyes. Electrical impulses feeding me impressions of this life I think I have lived, am living. Other times I find myself on a pulsing flat and endless purple plain, lying there dead. And the afterlife is just my spirit hovering above my sprawled and dead body in an eternal moment that I died. 1 billion years, and I'll still be hovering, watching the never-decaying body. No change ever in this purple tableland. It seems the energy is so thick it can support my dead body. Yet sometimes I find myself in a massive convention hall. People all gathered there after some major catastrophic event. We are waiting for instructions after being called here. Yet the instructions never seem to come. March 1968. Bicky explains everything. When I was born, I knew so much more than I know now. I remembered songs from before my birth. I knew the past, present, and future. I remembered hundreds of past lives in detail. Many of these lives live simultaneous with the others. I knew the adults were poisoning this world. They would destroy everything. I tried to tell them, but my throat could not form words. I could only goo and gah, desperately trying to tell them how to save their lives, to save this world, to be happier and fuller. But they just heard baby talk and they would grin and say, "That's cute." Nothing was cute about my desperate attempts to wake the sheep. It was deadly serious. And that I am no simple baby, but a savior, with an all-important message. But no attempt was made. I had to learn their way of speaking. The punchline is that by doing this, by learning the adult world and rules, my past memories drained away. I'm only left with two distinct past life memories. One of being a soldier in a past life, sitting on a beautiful beach with an Asian woman, cuddling up against me, kissing her silky, fragrant hair, and of being a brain trapped in a jar and fed stimulus, a random life template, a fed world program I had been through many variations of before and will be recycled through again and again, maybe forever. June 1970. A laundromat in hell. January 1972. Satan. When no one else was around, and I was really young, around 7, I had terrifying encounters with the devil, or some sort of evil presence. long-sounding claws, drawing down the inside of the walls late at night, like a demon trying to scrape at the dimensional walls and break into this world. My brother had a massive antique radio that got stations all over the world in police chatter and hospital and airport dialogue. But sometimes the air in our room would go dead. An eerie feeling of not being alone, of a dark evil. The radio would turn on. The devil speaking through it directly to me. I forget what he would say, but I do remember having long, fearful, but passionate arguments with the horned one. Sometimes, when the devil came, these little plastic balls I owned would hover in the air and swirl around in scary patterns that I later learned were magical glyphs. Once I was riding in the back seat of the family station wagon, Mom driving, Grandma and an aunt touring the local garage sales, the air suddenly went dead like it did back then, and the car sputtered and died. The adults did not seem scared. They just thought the car died from a mechanical failure. I knew different. The car was able to start again when that strange, eerie feeling left. The air opened up again, and time seemed to resume its normal pace. Mom said the car was just flooded, but I knew better. September 1974, Gurgle Parts. In grade school, Bicky is drawing pictures in his notebook during inactive period of class. The teacher went out for a few minutes, probably to puff a smoke. Tina Smith was talking to Rocky Bader, a future jock with rich parents. She likes him because he is mean and aggressive. She is grinning and saying, "Listen to this. I bet you don't know what this is." She then made a long, quavering gurgle sound that seemed to come from her nether regions, like flexing muscles churning thick liquids. Bader just smiled like he knew what's up. Bicky was confused, and he could tell Bader was as well. October 1978. I question your values. What's wrong with you, Hal? You like everything bad and hate everything good. You like rock music and books. You hate sports and killing animals. What's wrong with you? And that hair, are you a boy or a girl, Bicky? September 11, 2001. Bicky had just spent around 3 or 4 hours recording music in his den. He decided to take a short break, cruise the web, listen to NPR news, let his mind cool down, all that heavy thinking. Art eats a lot of brain glucose.
The White House is on fire. The Pentagon is on fire. And the Twin Towers are on fire,
says the news voice. Fear floods through Bicky. What the hell is going on? He hurries over to his parents to tell them. His aunt called and told them a few minutes before he arrived. He sat down all freaked out and watched TV coverage with them. His parents didn't have cable. They channel surfed the 3 available channels. All of them kept repeating the same message over and over again. How much of your freedom are you willing to give up to have safety? It was like a mantra. It was imprinting. It reminded him of what he had read about secret societies stimulating killing initiate newbie to scare the fuck out of him, then impart special information to imprint it deep into his mind. Bicky was getting suspicious now. Then he finds out the White House was not on fire. But Flight 91 was supposed to hit it, and the radio announced it was burning. What the fuck? A mix-up of a preformed message? Who knows? Then the government says the reason why the terrorists did this is because they hate freedom. What kind of second-rate comic book crap is that? Let's not even get into those fucking collapsing buildings. August 2011. Late summer party. A late summer party at a house he's never been to before. Vicky Howe was feeling pretty good. He was done drinking for the night. But his liver was saturated with the golden buzz. And the environment of the house provided a self-renewing contact high from the stoned revelers. Vicky wandered room to room, sometimes talking, but mostly just listening to the sprinkles of conversation in that mellow later phase of the party. He ended up on the comfy but tattered yellow-brown couch. A wooden coffee table in front filled with empty cups and beer bottles. The TV was on, but nobody was paying it any attention. The picture was too bright, too white, like an overexposed picture. The party had been happening for hours and it was starting to wind down. Folks drifting off to their cars and beyond. A pretty young woman with shoulder-length brown hair sat next to Vicky. They exchanged a warm smile. A sudden warm wave of love came over them. So oftentimes, Vicky's love life comes sudden and wordless. A deep yet fleeting thing. He chatted with her about nothing either could remember of the next day. She ended up falling asleep, leaning against his shoulder. A wonderful warm energy of life against his side. Vicky soon drifted off as well, leaning against the wall, head slumped forwards like a sleeping sparrow. September 2012. Family reunion party. There's a big family reunion that has overspilled into a massive party. About 60% relatives, 40% strangers who are drinking and mingling here. A large historic house, old but sparse furniture, dimly lit rooms. Bickles is walking around here with a styrofoam cup containing beer from one of the triad of slowly dwindling kegs. A primal wash over his mind. Whilst sipping at a cup, a elbow pokes his ribs. Vicky turns to see his uncle Lenny grinning at him behind a round, somewhat authoritarian stomach. He brags about how he just ripped off the sky for $200. Convinced him he was putting down a check for a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that shall never manifest. Uncle Larry is a preacher, man of God. He is stern in his lack of compassion for people who fall for his schemes. He didn't want that money, so I helped him out. Did him a favor. A service for which I charge him $200. Finding suckers who don't want their money is easier when God's on your side. While Uncle Lenny is talking, he suddenly puts a cigarette under Vicky's upper lip. He drags the cherry around in a burning circle. Vicky flinches back in shock. What the fuck? He escapes into the packed crowd and makes his way to the bathroom. Looking in a mirror, he sees the burn. Dark red and swollen. He looks pretty awful. Bicky complains to some relatives about it. They suggested that Bicky was out of line. They let it known that he's being an asshole. A bad party night. He couldn't really connect with anybody. And his fucking uncle burned him. Then he just smiled with sadistic pleasure. Bicky fumed. Tried to bitterly complain to people he met. Either they paid no attention or they voiced that he was wronging his long-suffering uncle with his complaints about nothing. His skin burned where the cigarette had seared it. The total unexpected shock of it. He couldn't even say anything or react other than to flee. God, had his uncle done this routine to him as a child? Burn and hide. Burn and hide. Isolation in such a packed crowd led Bicky back to the keg several times. One of these times, his uncle came up while he was pumping the keg trying to get the last golden warm drink out. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a syringe with a dirty orange fluid inside, packed to full capacity. Before Bicky could dodge away, his uncle stabbed him in the leg with it. Bicky twisted free and pushed his way through the tight crowd to get away. Uncle Lenny held the syringe, a little bent, and only about a fifth of the subject was injected. Now Bicky was really freaking out. What the fuck was that orange stuff in his bloodstream? He didn't feel any different yet, just a pain in his leg from the violent injection. Was it a virus? Or a virus combo? Poison? Some sort of drug? Bicky fears he will pass out, and he tries to get some family member to help him. They opinion that he is being a baby. They make it known that he is doing his uncle wrong with all his acting up. Nothing to get upset about is going on. The others who are also partying in the house ignore Bicky like he is some street bum who just pissed his pants while begging for change. Bicky makes his way to the basement. Lots of people are down here as well. People toking pipes, but only passing them around to small circles of friends. He don't know anyone down here. He's starting to feel sick and lightheaded. But it could be from the beer and the fear. He's leaning against the wall, starting to dry heave, when his creature uncle finds him. He flings the syringe like a dart, and it slams into Bicky's leg to the hilt, high up the leg. The force of the impact drives the plunger down, and now he has a full needle's worth of orange unknown fluid flowing in his veins. He turns pale with shock and crumbles to the floor. He pulls the syringe out. A live music set is starting up with a funky distorted bass line and a blues-drenched guitar. Bicky heaves and retches, making ghastly noises, but he cannot throw up. After about 48 minutes, he's feeling a little better. He gets up and tells everyone he sees what just happened. Still, they think he's being a prick. Several relatives say, "Don't you ever come to one of our family get-togethers again." Fair enough. Bicky stalks out of the house, slamming the door behind him. A bass blur of the blues in the basement below fading as he fumes and walks. Death of the party. Bicky is at a party, drinking beer from a styrofoam cup. Rock music from the mid-70s is now on the CD changer. Lots of smoking cigarettes and talking amongst the crowd. Mostly men in their late 30s and mid-40s, but many have brought their teenage and early 20 kids to the reverie. It's a colorful cast. Folks nowadays never seem to fade into gray outfits the way people used to. Now they seem to never fully mature, and as a result, they age slower. Bicky is now 46, talking to a very pretty skinny girl about 20, the daughter of one of his fellow Generation Xers who are at the party. The difference in ages does not make Bicky want her any less. The biological imperative. If you say you grow older and no longer appreciate a beautiful young woman in her prime, you lie to yourself and or me. Her black shining silky hair, tight brown unwrinkled skin, pretty fox-like face with a almost pharaoh-like black eyeliner makeup. And she seems so open, so interested in everything he has to say. But she is circulating throughout the party and only flitted over for a brief meeting and conversation. She soon wanders off without a further word. The world must seem warmer, friendlier to pretty girls like her. Open doors and desire-filled looks everywhere she goes. A life Bicky could only imagine. He wanders on, talking to people, standing still while others talk. The pretty girl is leaving. Bicky feels a sad, hopeless desire for her, hopes she will turn his way and wave. But she doesn't notice him at all, she just walks out. Bicky is standing by this table where a couple of joints are circulating. He gets a few puffs before they are burned to nubs. The center of attention at the table is a big, chunky, know-it-all, blowhard dude. Dressed in blue Venom jacket and pants, a Go USA shirt, expensive tennis shoes. He is roaring his harsh opinions while drinking whiskey from a clinking, ice-filled glass and chewing on a long cigar like a railroad robber baron. His name is Gerald Davis, an aircraft worker for the last 25 years, high-paid and lazy. Does as little as possible on the job while complaining about others' lack of work ethic. You can still rock in America by Night Ranger ends. Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana takes its place on the randomized CD changer.
Turn that socialist crap off and put on some fucking Nugent!
No one's minding the stereo, however. And Cobain is still singing in his raspy howl. Gerald turns to Bicky, who is hanging here still, although he's starting not to dig the people at the table.
The 60s are over. Cut your hair, you commie prick.
He sends a cloud of cigar smoke to halo Bicky as a punctuation. Maybe the whole house should clear out to make room for your bloated and gaseous ego. Bicky replies.
Are you starting shit, little man? Better shut up, or the next sound you make will be from you spitting your teeth on the floor.
I call that bold talk for one-eyed fat man. This netted Bicky some giggles.
I don't have to take this crap,
Gerald says as he gets up and walks. Bicky thinks he's walking away from being pissed off. But no, he walks behind him and puts a handgun to the back of his head. Bicky knows he's gonna die. No question about it. It's a frightening and sure feeling. A feeling he has known so many times in so many lives. But when you're gonna die anyway, there's no reason to grovel. Go fuck your mother, I did, Bicky says.
Bam!
Brains on the table, twitching dying body on the floor.